So it's far from a perfect game, but at the same time, I mean,
you shut your mouth. It's a perfect game.
Hey,
it's so good that its faults bring it down to perfection.
Welcome to New Game Plus. You are listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
I'm Nolan.
And this is episode 146, and it is a special episode altogether. We're super excited to have a guest with us today. He is the guru of gaming, board gaming, at least. He's the founder of the Dice Tower, the premier one-stop shop for all things board game related. They have, goodness, hundreds of video and audio podcasts, video reviews, unboxings, and even live stream miniature painting sessions if you want to go like just completely nerdy. We're so excited to have him join us today. It's been a long time coming. So will you join me in welcoming the one and the only Tom Vassell?
Woo!
I think that's a good thing that there's one and only. And also to clarify, I got other people doing the painting. I did painting once and it was mocked soundly.
Got you. So you don't do that anymore. Tom, would you please just take a moment, just introduce yourself to our viewers? I know you can, you know yourself better than I know yourself, so feel free.
Well, yes, I think so. I mean, you would have gone mad anyway if that was the case. No, I like board games. I've been playing them for a long time. And, you know, about 15 years ago, decided to, as a hobby, start writing about them, which then changed to podcasting about them, which changed to videoing about them. We still run the podcast and we have a video show, and all this is at dicetower.com. We try to talk about every major board game release, which if you are not up in the board gaming world, you might think, oh, how many a year is that? There are thousands of them.
Yeah.
There are so many good games that come out at any given point, and it's confusing which ones are good, which ones are bad. We'll tell you. You might disagree, but at least we have an opinion about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you also have some kind of connection and relationship to video games. I know you probably don't have near the amount of time to invest into it because you're so deep into the board game universe. Actually, let me ask you this. Have you ever been on a video game podcast?
Yes, but the episode was deleted.
Oh, wow.
The guy who recorded it deleted it. And I said, you know what? Let's not redo it. So I think this is the first time.
We're honored. First successful time, at least.
Yeah, we promise not to delete this episode.
From then on, I've always recorded my end of everything.
There you absolutely go.
Proof.
Well, Tom, we've got a few. We usually do this when we have a guest come on. It's a small section up front of just rapid fire questions, where it's a series of largely unrelated questions that we ask you. And the goal is to not think too long on any particular question, but to kind of just answer from your gut, the first thing that comes to your mind. Are you down for the challenge?
Oh, I live for this. Let's bring it.
Great. We're going to start with favorites. So as briefly and concisely as possible, just answer kind of what comes to your mind. What is your favorite genre of music?
Dixie.
Favorite superhero movie or show?
Oh, Avengers Infinity War.
Favorite Disney movie?
Avengers Infinity War? Can I say it twice?
I guess, hey.
I feel nice. Like I can.
That works. Yeah. Favorite Harry Potter character other than Harry?
Oh, Neville.
Favorite kind of Girl Scout cookie?
Oh, the peanut butter chocolate ones, but I'm not eating any of them. They're too expensive, too many calories.
Hey, but they're worth it. Favorite book?
Oh, the Oathbringer, which is part of the.
Oh my god!
Are you serious, Tom?
I'm rereading it a second time right now. That's how good it is,
Kenny.
I'm pretty sure this is a topic you don't actually want to get into, Dustin.
We're going to have to.
A, for time, and B, because I have some things that need to be said to you that don't need to be said on air.
Okay, we got to stop.
Just to clarify, this is one of the greatest books ever written.
Oh,
I mean,
my gosh.
Brandon Sanderson, and, you know, I read Reckoners first, which I thought was fantastic, and then I went to Mistborn, which I said, wow, that's even better than Reckoners.
It's one of my
and then
favorite,
I went
yep.
to, what's the series called now? The
Stormlight?
Stormlight series, and oh my goodness, Robert Jordan should weep George R. R. Martin, you can retire. He's better than both you put together.
Preach! Yeah. This is so good.
Yeah, he's easily at the top of the genre right now and killing it.
Also, he writes books, which is a nice change from the usual fantasy author.
Yes. Sure. So good, but moving on, unfortunately. Are you more of a coffee guy or a tea guy?
Tea, for sure.
Who would you most like to play Twister with? Anyone dead or alive?
I'm refusing to answer this question.
Okay. Now, a few board game specific questions. What was the first board game you fell in love with?
Ooh, as a kid, probably Stratego.
What was the last board game you fell in love with?
Oh.
Love.
Oh, Hail Hydra.
Excuse me? No.
This is not a code word for me to take over the podcast.
Okay.
There's a game called Hail Hydra. Trying to figure out, you're all Avengers and you're trying to figure out who's Hydra agent or not. Oh, it's really, cool. Really fun.
What is one of the most overrated board games?
Ooh.
I've done a whole list on overrated board games. I'll say poker is probably overrated.
There you go.
What is currently your number one board game?
Gloomhaven.
Personally. Say it again. Gloomhaven?
Gloomhaven, wow. Yes.
Yeah. All right. Video game specific. What video game console did you grow up playing?
The Commodore 64.
Yes. And what is your favorite Zelda?
Oh, Breath of the Wild by a mile.
Nice.
I mean, the Super Nintendo one is very, very good, but Breath of the Wild is amazing.
Yeah.
What modern video game, let's say last 10 years, have you spent the most time playing?
Let me see. 10 years? So that probably doesn't include the Civilizations. So...
Oh my gosh.
Some of the recent ones it does.
Well, yes, but now that I'm married with children, I don't do what I did in college.
Because
college would have been Civilization hands down. Maybe Breath of the Wild, although I'm playing a new game, Xenoblade Chronicles 2, which is taking forever.
I take it you're a Switch owner?
I am a Switch owner.
Nice.
I have a computer, and then I get one game system and the iPad. So I picked the Switch because the family can play it. Although it's really hard for me to keep ahead of my kids in these games.
Final question here in the rapid fire round is, what is your favorite Final Fantasy game?
Okay, so not including Tactics, we'll just go to the regular Final Fantasies. That's a tough one. It depends with how I'm in the mood, because it's either 7 or 6 or 3, whatever you want to call it. So probably 7. I just like the materia system so much in that game.
Good. Well, great. That is the rapid fire round. And honestly, from the question, the way that you answer these questions, I feel like you are a part of this podcast already. Like all of the things that you answered are the things you touched on each of our loves and passions. Yeah. Seriously, with Breath of the Wild for Nolan, Oathbringer and Brandon Sanderson, all of us, primarily Kenny here. And then Final Fantasy VII, that's me, man. So welcome.
Welcome to the family.
And so you said other than Tactics, you said that for a reason, because we gave you a chance to pick any game for us to play that is 15 years old or older this past week. And the game that you selected is the one that we are going to spend the remainder of this show talking about. So join us now as we talk about our retro game of the week, Final Fantasy Tactics.
Overview.
Final Fantasy Tactics was developed and published by Squaresoft. You know them as Square Enix nowadays, but they went through transition in the 90s, early 2000s. So Squaresoft, yeah, that's what they used to be called. This is a PlayStation 1 title, and it's a tactical role-playing game. It's a strategy game. So you know the Final Fantasy series, I'm sure, if you're listening to this podcast, but this Final Fantasy title definitely veers off the main, like, Final Fantasy paradigm. Like,
it's
we're
very different.
Yeah, yeah, we're getting into different territory for them. So this was actually a really big title for Squaresoft, in my opinion. Just based on, you know, how different it is compared to some of the main games. So basically, this game follows Ramza Baluv and this war that is going on that I cannot begin to get into, because even reading the synopsis of this game, if you haven't even played it, it's ridiculously confusing. But basically, all you need to know is that there is a war going on, and you are a mercenary, and you are part of a mercenary squad, and you're protecting this princess, and you get into this, like, who gets the throne type of war between these two sides, and it's very medieval style. So that's kind of the setting. That's kind of what's going on when you're thrown into this. So I said it's a strategy game, and it So to give you a picture of what that looks like, it's more of a, it's an isometric view of a playing field that you can rotate, that rotates so you can see the terrain and everything. So there's very, you know, there's different levels of terrain, there's different types of terrain. And you have these sprite characters that, in my opinion, and we'll probably get into this, the sprite and the character style in this game really like started not a genre, but like really influential in like graphic design and even just sprites in general in video games. And you control these, each one of these characters, and you have two sides. So you have your characters against the others and you move them, you, but you engage in combat with each other. You have like hit points and then the amount that you're going to deal, and you kind of, their strategy and like who needs to attack who, where do I need to stand so that I'm safe. So it's turn-based and it's very, very different, like I said, from the typical Final Fantasy games.
So Tom, first of all, I know exactly why you picked this game. You picked this video game because it is a board game.
Yeah, sort of. Although if this was a board game, I'd be pretty irritated because the amount of information I would have to keep track of would be immense.
Sure. Yeah. And we'll talk about it some. The balance, I feel, in some areas is off. So it's far from a perfect game, but at the same time, I mean,
you shut your mouth. It's a perfect game.
Hey,
it's so good that its faults bring it down to perfection.
Oh, wow. It starts.
This
way
will be an interesting episode.
That's super. Yeah, no, but I'm not arguing. I love Final Fantasy. It's my favorite of all time. But I understand what, at least why, like someone who loves board games would love Final Fantasy Tactics, because you are, you know, very literally moving these different pieces to different squares, like predetermined spaces on the playing board. And each character or character type has different abilities and different things that they can do, you know, and it's turn-based. So it's very board game-esque, even to the point that, like, I feel like you could almost translate a lot of this to a physical board game and it still be a very enjoyable game to play.
Yeah, yeah, there have been board games that have been similar. Crossmaster Arena is a somewhat similar style game to this. There's games that kind of do this a little bit, but I've never found one that's been like a perfect match.
Hmm. Sure.
So I don't know if I mentioned this game came out in 1998 in the States. Japan got it the year before. So this game has a pretty big following. I wouldn't call it a cult following. It's pretty popular.
Oh, and it might be cult. So like this is.
I just heard somebody say that it was a perfect game and get offended at anything lower than that level.
Okay, it's a cult following.
Of course, of course. Obviously, we say such things with somewhat grain of salt. I mean,
sure.
I understand.
Oh,
that.
Sure. But yeah, the people that like this game truly love this game.
And I think we should mention here that you can right now get this for the iOS and Android, which is fantastic. I don't know what the Android controls are like, but the iOS, when it first came out, I was a little annoyed because they made you use part of the iOS board as like a NES controller, or I'm sorry, PlayStation mm-hmm. controller, and move things, which is really annoying. Hmm. Now you can just move and touch the square in the battlefield you want to move, like you should be able to do with a tablet.
Right.
And sure. So I think it's actually better on the tablet than it was on the PlayStation.
Tom, I got to know your history with this game, because if it's anything like me, I had Final Fantasy VII was one of the games that I first fell in love with, and it got me into RPGs. And so I was in like rental game stores looking for more, and Final Fantasy Tactics came out months after VII came out, like same year, at least in Japan, I think. And so it came out shortly after. And so when I saw that again, I knew that I had to rent it and take it home. What's your history, your experience with this game?
Yeah, a friend of mine had both of them in college, and I played VII first and got very, you know, went through, beat VII. And along the way, I said, oh, I'll try out this Tactics. I played the first couple battles, and I was like, man, the graphics are not nearly as good as Final Fantasy VII. You know, it's, and these summons are not near. Ooh, look how the summon is just a sprite jumping across the screen.
Right.
There's no Knights of the Round Table, I'll tell you that.
Well, let's all be thankful for that. They don't need to do that with every. Yeah, I have enough of that nonsense. But
saved hours of our life.
It was also extremely hard. I was like, man, I'm getting my butt kicked every time mm-hmm. I play this thing. And I'd had no strategy. You know, the internet wasn't really available for strategy guides. I guess it was, but there, you know, I just kind of muscled through it. And I'd say after you get through maybe the first 10 battles, I was hooked. And then I played this game completely through. I played it as soon as I got to a certain point, I was like, I'm doing this again. I'm going to build it the stuff I want to build it this way. I went through and played it again. We got married a few years later. I played through it again then because I got my own PlayStation. And several times after that, and now that it's come out in iOS, I played through it twice more. But I'm playing the first time I played all the way up to level 99 and then just kept playing and playing.
Oh, my goodness. That is a lot of time investment.
Yeah, that's great.
So if you're listening to this and you're one of my teachers in college, this is why I did not do so well in class.
Let's hope they're not listening.
So you have history with this game. I've already shared mine. Nolan Kinney, had you played this game before? How much time had you been able to invest, or was this pretty fresh this week?
Yeah, mine's not near as epic. I owned this game somehow. I had my hands on a copy of this game, but I didn't play through all of it. And I know that's shameful to admit, but I played maybe 20% of it and got distracted with the N64. So I have it.
Yes, I
guess
I
that counts.
That.
And pretty fresh for me, although I had some familiarity with the game just in being around and watching other people play it and, you know, sort of just as part of Final Fantasy's world, I was familiar, but certainly had never sat down and played it before this week.
One final interesting thing about this game and the world that it takes place in, a realm called Ivalice, and Square, for some reason, or at least a specific team at Square, Square Enix, is very interested in this world because they've used it for some other games like that are just unrelated. So Final Fantasy XII takes place there. This game called Vagrant Story takes place there, and some other games too. It's like, I don't know why they really enjoy this realm, but for whatever reason, it's been reused in other games.
Well, you mentioned the story and how it was convoluted, and it is convoluted, but it's also not foolishly convoluted. There's a lot of times a lot of the fantasy, different games, these JRPGs, their stories are pretty weak, actually.
Sure.
Final Fantasy has done a better job than most, although usually the Final Fantasy games are big guy wants to destroy humanity somehow, some way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but this one, it's War of the Roses. It's definitely based on that type of thing. And there's two smaller factions, and as the game progresses, you find out that there's factions behind factions and betrayals. But if you do go through it all, it does make sense. It's hard to keep track of sometimes, but they really did a good job plotting it out. It's a really well thought out world.
Yeah, there's certainly a difference between stories that are too big or poorly written and just a game that is long enough to give you time to tell a good story. And so it's that time that we're up against in terms of going through it. But I think I'd agree, at least, that it's pretty pretty well thought out.
Gameplay.
Well, I think that the one thing that you should point out here, and for people like, what is the big draw of this game? And there's one thing, and that's level progression.
Yeah.
It's unlike any other game in that not only are you progressing in levels, I mentioned you can go up to level 99. Big deal. No one cares about that nonsense. because that's in every game. But what this game has is classes. And so each of your characters starts with a certain class. You're going to get some actual real characters that you'll start as one, and then you'll have other ones join you throughout the game. There's a whole list of characters that can join you. But you can also hire these generic as all get out characters, and they start as a squire or a chemist. Those are two classes. But as the game goes by, you can jump into, I want to say there is 18, 19, 20, 21 classes total. And you can be part of all these classes. So when you can be one class and then have a subset of another class and then have a reaction from another class and then have a movement from another class, and putting all these classes together is where I spent a good chunk of my time sitting here. Okay, I'm going to level this up. Oh, now I'm the wizard. Now what can I do with this wizard? And to me, that part of this game was so freeform, to where I liked my NPCs almost more than I liked the the story characters, because sure, I had made them custom and made them mine.
And you said custom, and I think that's key, because what's cool is that you're not just bound to the job class that you select for a person. You're able to like move them over into a different class, learn an ability or two, and then switch them to an altogether different job. And so you truly can customize your characters so that you could literally have a Wyatt white mage, but you can also train them to have some monk-like abilities. So you can have a white mage that can punch enemies in the face and do it effectively. And that's just super cool that you have that kind of customization within this game.
Yeah. And anytime you give that many options and that much customization, you're also just guaranteeing some replay value, which is just from a game design and from a popularity point of view, something that's going to be really big.
Yeah, that's what I was about to point out. Like Tom was saying that he's played through this game tons of times, and it's like you can keep playing this game and have a different experience each time just based on those job decisions, like where you want to take your job classes. And like that, I was actually really taken back by how detailed and intricate that system is. Because let me just say, I Fire Emblem Pro right here, step aside, I'm a Fire Emblem Pro. And I came into this game thinking that it's going to be easy, strategy, turn-based game, I'm fine. I don't see that many similarities with Fire Emblem here. I really don't. I thought I would totally, and it's kind of weird that I don't, but it does not feel like that kind of game.
Another thing, like it does go so deep, because at the beginning of the game, not only do you choose your character's name, so you can change Ramza's name to, be silly butt or whatever you want it to be, but you also choose his birthday, and then there's the different signs, I'm so unfamiliar with these, but like astrological
zodiacs,
whatever. And then really like you don't necessarily know this, because the game doesn't necessarily do a lot of explaining here. It's something that was unique, is that it's not just in your face tutorials that a lot of people don't like today. Of you had to like press select and do a lot of hovering over and reading if you wanted to know it. But there, even your astrological or zodiac sign, it makes you either compatible or incompatible with other characters. And so you might never know why your healing spells are constantly missing on certain of your teammates. And it could simply be just because your signs are different from one another.
Yeah. And I didn't know that would matter when I was selecting that. Like in Fire Emblem, they also make you do the birthday thing, and that ends up having a slight effect on like support stuff that you do. But like, yeah, I kind of felt that tutorial being missing, but it wasn't like I didn't know what was going on. I should explain why I think this is different than Fire Emblem. So when I started this game and you get into the first battle, I'm used to like, I don't know, army style, like frontline going against frontline type of thing, right? The way this game lays out the battles in that isometric view, it's very like, it's more compact for sure. It's way smaller than like a map, a top-down view of a map. And everyone, it felt more like everyone was having a conversation over here in this corner and then over there on the left, instead of a front line against a front line. I don't know if that was just me, but it just felt so unique.
It's definitely a smaller size, but in my mind, that's a huge benefit, because you know my feelings on some of the others, but they were too sprawling, too long to get everything moving, too much time just shuffling your stuff around. The pace of this, because it was a pretty small board and you really got straight into the action, was really welcome in my mind.
Yeah, you're usually hitting each other on turn two, sometimes turn one.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And so like they're very tight. Now there's very different stages and terrains that you have to work through. Some of them good, some of them not as good, but I think it's always like you only have five or six characters on your side at a time. Mm-hmm. And the enemy team is somewhat comparable in their size. So again, you're not overwhelmed like you could be in some of the Fire Emblem games, where your party literally outside of battle could be like 50 or 60.
I know.
Well, actually, in this game, I don't know if you guys discovered this, but almost every zone has an ultra hard version. And if you move into that zone from a certain direction, one out of so many times will be very difficult. And so you'll run into, like, for example, the one I go into, and instead of fighting six guys, there's 11 monks that you're fighting.
Oh my goodness.
I did not figure that out, and I'm kind of glad I didn't. But it's good to know the challenge.
I'm sure
there.
You guys must have run into one where you go in and all of a sudden, instead of there being like six random creatures, it was six dragons.
Yeah.
Well, so the thing is, you do have a lot of story. There aren't random encounters as there are with other Final Fantasy games, but there's an overworld map, and when you move from location to location, there are a few predetermined spots where you can get a random encounter.
Well, what do you mean a few? It's most of the spots are true. That. is random encounters.
It's not like it's not necessarily story evolving. It definitely you can train your characters in that, but sometimes you're fighting creatures. Like you're fighting creatures that you might be familiar with. So chocobos, which is super sad to be able to strike a chocobo with my sword.
Yeah, what?
Oh my goodness, I killed those happily. Have you ever been fireballed by a black chocobo?
Yeah, no, absolutely terrifying. So we've talked some about the different class system. I'm interested in each of yours, Tom, specifically. Do you have a favorite job class? Is there a character archetype that you always try to have any time you play this game?
Well, sure. One thing I like about the game is that the classes start out normal and they get weirder as it goes by, which I like. My favorite class is actually the dancer. Because she does this one randomized negative status thing to every creature on the board. So suddenly one creature turns into a frog, one is blinded, and I just like that.
That's super strong.
That's random, but you have to, and it takes forever to build a character up to be a dancer that powerful. Probably after that, I think I like the Lancer. This takes the from several of the Final Fantasies where a guy would just jump off screen and then jump back down and hit somebody. It's really good, really powerful. But it takes a little bit to figure out that you aren't missing the characters. You know, I'm going to pick and jump on that guy, then he moves. Because in this game, turn order is so critical of when the characters go.
Yeah, it's so important. And the cool thing is you can see it at any time. You know, you can press pause or select or whatever it is, and you can pull up that turn order. Because here, it's cool. It's different than what's your games again, Nolan?
Fire Emblem.
It's different than Fire Emblem in that I think that you kind of do your whole team, and then the CPU has a turn to do their whole team.
That's what I'm used to.
In this one, everyone's got a speed stat, and that speed stat helps to place them in a turn order along with every other character, good or bad, your team or the other team. And so you could potentially have a character that strikes twice before another character strikes once, depending on those speed stats. And I really enjoy that because it doesn't take you out of the battle too long.
Yeah, and that's like the charge time mechanic, right? The CT or whatever, when it charges to 100, then the unit can move. That was foreign to me, but I like that design. I think it makes it pretty challenging, but I love hard strategy games like this, so it was really welcome. To answer your question, Dustin, gotta go with the Thief. I always love the Thief.
You always do.
It's a cool class.
Yeah, the Thief is actually my least favorite, I think, of all of them. because the Thief doesn't really have a lot of useful things. I mean, you need to use it over the course of the game. I feel like it's required because there's a few rare pieces of armor or whatever that I need to steal, but they're weak. They have Steel Heart, which means they can turn someone onto your team, which works like 37% of the time or whatever. They always, whenever you attack someone in this game, they give you the percentage, and you're like, oh, I have an 82% chance of this happening, which I love because I love math. Yeah, the Thief is the worst. So what you other guys pick will be better than him.
I feel like we're such kindred spirits.
I love that he's always agreeing
with Nolan.
He's like, even unprovoked, it's just like, here's my opinion. Great. And then y'all are like, nope, your opinion's wrong.
I like the
Thief more now.
All right, Kenny, what's yours? And you're probably just going to say Squire because that's as far as you got this week.
Yeah, I definitely didn't get far enough into the game to really get to see some of the cool stuff. Conceptually, and from a like classes that I like status, the idea of having a bard accompanied with a bunch of dancers is hilarious and thematic to me. And
I don't think clearly you can win with that.
It certainly may not work at all. But the idea of like a bard type character and then dancers to kind of complement the lore, and no idea if it's actually a good idea, but conceptually that's where my heart is.
All right, never mind. The Thief sounds good now.
He got worse.
yeah, absolutely.
All right, so I would just say that I've always enjoyed a Time Mage because they've got a lot of really good spells, right? They've got haste, and for your team, they've got slow for the other team. On top of like float, which allows you to move better along the terrain. And then they've got a few offensive spells like later on in the game. So I've always liked Time Mage, and then I've always thought funny the job of Calculator. That is one of the jobs, Calculator.
It's the most unique class and yet immensely frustrating. So when you're playing this game, there are several magicians you can get. There's a Time Mage, a wizard, a priest, an oracle, And all these have different spells. Well, if you get them all upgraded to different levels, you'll get the calculator. And the calculator, whenever someone casts a spell in this game, you're like, casting a spell. And then we keep going through people's turns, and eventually the spell goes off. A calculator spell goes off instantly, but you have to first pick something. So you'll say everyone on a certain level of height on the board, or everyone's level, you know, how far up, what are you, level 62 or whatever. And then divisible by 3, 4, 5, you pick those two things, and then you pick a spell that affects them. So it might go, all right, I'm going to cast fire on everyone who's on the ground level, level 1. Great, 2 of my characters are down there and 5 of the enemies. Nah, seems worth it. Let's do it. And so you end up hitting your own people most of the time.
Yeah.
Or like when you heal your own people, you end up healing one of the bad guys. But you're trying to pick one that will help you out better than everybody else. And in fact, this is one of the few times, if you want to cheat a little, if you put your character on auto, you can put your characters on auto. They usually don't do a very good job. But if you have a calculator and you put them on auto, the computer will always pick the best possible thing.
Ooh, that's a nice little...
You got a little bit of hacks, point. Right? no, but you should be hearing, if you're listening to this, like the diversity of characters, the diversity of job types, the diversity of team compositions. And the cool thing is, like, just depending on the battle that you're about to go into, you might have 20 different kind of characters to select from. And based on what that battle is going to require, you might use a party of 5 here that you don't use in your next battle. So it just gives you a lot of flexibility and options on what kind of team composition you're playing, which means, and I think this is a good transition into this, that at the beginning of this game, the first time you pick up this game, it is very, very, very difficult.
Oh, yeah.
You thought so?
No, it's very, at the beginning, your characters die and you're like, do I bring them back to life? Because if you don't heal them within 3 turns, they're gone forever.
Yep. Forever. And you can lose anyone except like your main character, which is super sad if you've been leveling them up and you have a relationship with them.
Yeah, that can hurt really bad.
The game has a save thing, so it's possible to go back and redo the battle.
Sure, but there are some battles in this game where you have to fight multiple battles within the level without being defeating. Able to save in between.
It's like soul crushing.
Oh my goodness, it becomes so difficult. Even early on when I was getting into some randomized battles, like I had to play through, like maybe my 4th or 5th battle, I had to play through it multiple times. I was streaming a little bit this week and I was getting frustrated because I haven't yet been able to even like level up or change the job class of my team. So I had like 4 squires and 1 chemist, just at the base mm-hmm. level yeah. of your physical attackers and magic. And I wasn't able to do it until I finally got lucky on a turn. Until you learn your team composition, until you learn what the characters are able to do, what the abilities do, and until you level up, I do think that it's a grind at the beginning.
Yeah.
And also, you can, if you have a mediator, you can get almost any monster in the game to join your party.
Which is so fun.
And there are, I believe, 17 different characters that will also join your party who can not only be leveled up in all these different classes, but have a class of their own on top of that.
Super cool. Yeah, and on top of that, like I know that there's a few different like hidden characters and a few different even hidden like super challenge stages. I just think, again, that's some of what Final Fantasy has been known for, and I think they do it so well, and it makes the game just extra fun on top of what it already is.
Yeah,
and I will say this. Some of those hidden characters, and this is – I don't care about spoilers. The game has like been out now for 20 years.
Go for it.
But Cloud from Fantasy Flight – I mean, from Final Fantasy VII is in the game.
Yes.
And he's a real pain to get. And once you finally get him, he's not that worth it.
He doesn't have his Buster Sword.
Not good?
No, he does. But he starts at like level 1. And by the time you get him, your party's like at level 60. And you're like, all right, come on, kindergartner, help us out. And when you finally get him up to his ultimate levels, he's good, but he's not the best. In fact, there's one character, some of the characters you meet are not that fantastic. There's one, Count Orlando. Did you guys get him at any point?
No.
I hadn't in this playthrough, no, but I have before.
Yeah, when you get him, you don't have to work very hard the rest of the game. He's pretty close to overpowered.
Yeah.
Maybe not. I mean, you can still lose with him easily, I guess, but he's easily the most powerful character in the game, which doesn't bother me too much because I always spend my time trying to level everyone up evenly. So I'll be like, all right, you five go in this battle. Oh man, this is my bottom five guys. All right, here we go.
Right. There's where the challenge is.
But I just love it. There's just, you just keep playing over and over and over again. And any single run through, I probably play through 300 or 400 battles.
Wow. That's a lot. And they're not short.
You talk about being able to play this game over and over and over again. I think that's a really natural place for us to kind of move our conversation a little bit to the left and talk about how this game aged.
Aged. Well, I got to be, and it's always dangerous when we talk about the age of a game because nostalgia holds that thing, right? I played this in my college years. So it, for graphic wise, it's okay. The animations are not fantastic. The sound effects are pretty bad, actually. How many times I can hear that?
You know, yeah, they're definitely not pushing what the PlayStation was, possible of doing during that time. Yeah.
At the same time, I didn't know that I cared at the time, and I still don't know that I care. But yes, there is that. The manipulating the board to see exactly where stuff is, there's way better ways to do that now. You know, when I do Breath of the Wild, these other games, and I'm flipping a 3D board all different directions, this game was a little more strenuous in moving to exactly where you could see the stuff to where it was going to be.
Sure. But again, I think what you said, I think it during the time, like 97, 98, in a lot of ways, I think there was a lot of it gave you a lot of control. Like I was able to move the camera at all was a nice thing, but I could move it left and right. I could get it closer to the battle or further away from the battle. And the graphics, although they're right, there's not like cutscenes, traditional cutscenes. It's not pushing the system in any way. I think it works for the kind of game that we're playing.
Fantastic. Yeah.
On the new on the iPad version, they've actually replaced some of the cutscenes with cartoon style cutscenes.
Yeah, I saw that. They've been doing that with some of the remakes too that have been ported to Steam. They're like more cartoony sprite looking cutscenes. Yeah, but I think honestly, like this is PlayStation 1, so I didn't play the GBA one. I did PS1 this week, and I'm blown away by these graphics. I think they're still so good. I love this style. So yeah, it's different than the rest of the Final Fantasy series, but there's something super charming about the sprites. And I love that each character has their own portrait when they talk and, you know, they look a certain way. I think it's so, so cool. And I did not find that a hurdle at all. The camera,
it's like those little chibi graphics. Isn't that what those little guys
that's
are called?
That's what I'm saying. Chibi, not sprites. Sprites are sprites. Chibi graphics. I like that. I think it's pretty fun. So that wasn't a hurdle for me. The camera wasn't too bad. I thought it was kind of smooth. Like it had like a speed, like when you change the angle, it would be fast and then it would kind of slow down. It was pretty smooth for PS1. I thought it was okay.
Sound effects may not have been great, but I loved at least the music here and feel like it stayed pretty safe and timeless. Like it's just good video game fare. And I got to say, if we're talking age, the fact that there has been enough following that they have done re-releases just not only speaks to its enduring popularity, despite kind of, you know, any limitations of what it was originally on, but just speaks to how easy it is for people to pick it up and play it regardless today. We have a lot of games that are actually very difficult for people to go back and play. And because this game has been released, re-released, sideways released, and now phone released, etc., it's more accessible than a lot of them. So from a practical level, that's an important consideration.
I will say one of the things that ages poorly with this base game, again, because there's been different re-releases and they fixed some of these, is with the translation errors.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So there are misspellings. There are the super awkward attempts to spell English words like a Japanese person would pronounce them. And then also with, we've already talked, the story is kind of, it's deep. It's fantasy, very Final Fantasy. And maybe a little bit convoluted. I love that, but it might be hard for some people to latch onto. But with the different misspellings, with the different kind of words that they've used, and the way that they've told the story through dialogue and stuff, some of it can be even more difficult to be able to track with the story. Again, I think in different renditions of this game, they've been able to fix some of those things. But with this base game, you get a lot of those errors and difficulties.
And it doesn't take long. It's pretty obvious from the very opening scene that the translation was not super on point.
I wonder if that's fixed in the ports.
I'm trying to think of that, actually, because I don't remember thinking it was bad translation on iOS.
They must have improved it.
And they definitely did. So we've mentioned it. We mentioned the phone and different things, but there was like an official re-release of this game for the PSP, the PlayStation Portable, in 2007 called War of the Lions. And they added some, so it is the game. They kind of spruced it up a little bit. They added some cutscenes, but it went along with the kind of hand-drawn feel. They fixed some of the balance issues. And with that, they did some better translations within there. And I think that version of it is probably more accessible today, although there is a lot more loading time, and then there's slowdown in the battle as well. So you kind of give and take a little.
Final thoughts.
So at the end of each and every one of our episode, we determine whether or not this game receives our New Game Plus status, which is just our general thumbs up or thumbs down. And we kind of go around the circle. It requires typically 2/3 of the vote, but we'd say majority vote to swing one way or another. And all we're saying is, hey, do we suggest that our listeners, that our viewers, find a copy of this game and play it, or reserve your retro video game time for another video game or for another board game in this case? So we'll allow kind of our guests to go first. Tom, so here's kind of just, you summarize your main thoughts about this, the good, the bad, the ugly, if there's any. There's no ugly, right? And then do you give this game your vote for New Game Plus status?
Yeah, I mean, the only ugly I could think about, I like how there's good, bad, and ugly, so there's two negative things. But the only thing I would say that it is very complex to get into. There's a lot going on. Mm-hmm. And I guess you guys are right that it doesn't have a tutorial system, although I miss those days where I wasn't handheld through everything.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
But it is complex. There's a lot going on, and it's very hard. But if you can get through the first 10 levels and you'll start building up your characters, the depth and the breadth of building your characters up makes it so that while I don't mind grinding in RPGs, JRPGs, I don't know why, I just kind of sit back and just fight. In this game, grinding is a pleasure, because to go through a level, you're fighting random creatures. You go to different levels, they have certain creatures will show up at different levels, and you'll try out different classes, and so you're upgrading, and it always feels like each battle you have a new tactic, you have something new that you're going to be able to throw into this battle, and some new enemy that's going to fight a different way, and the enemies level up with you, and so they'll be throwing harder stuff at you too. And so the act of building up is just really fun, and as you get more powerful, the combinations of characters that you can do, you can try all sorts of things. It offers a range of customization for characters that's unmatched in any of the other Final Fantasy games. And this type of game, which is squad versus squad, there's a lot of these games out there. There's on a PC, on a PlayStation and stuff, and I've never played one that I liked even half as much as this game. Wow. It is that good. It is one that thinking about playing now tonight.
we gave you an excuse to go back to it.
I like that it's on the iPad for me. The iPad's the perfect place to play it. And man, it's hard for me to think of anything I dislike about the game. I just love the huge customization. I love the secrets. There's so many cool little secret things that you can find. You don't need to find them. I love that even when I'm at the top level of all my characters, I can go into this optional dungeon, go down to any Fortnite dungeon, and I might get my butt kicked by the monsters there if I'm not careful.
Right.
So fantastic. It thumbs up, and I'm going to give it 2 to help swing the vote my way.
Okay. So we get 2 votes there. Nolan?
So we don't normally do the good, bad, ugly thing, but I kind of like that, so I'm going to do it. The good, it's beautiful. I think the level design on each one of these is really good. It's crazy that each one is unique in a different way. Some of the in-between battles are, you know, cut and paste, you know, grass and rocks that you have to get around, but not really. Like, you don't feel it. They're all really beautiful, really smart in how they designed it. And that's so core for this genre. Like, you need to have really good level design and interesting ways of going through it. So that's great. The bad, I don't have one. I think this game is very good. The ugly is the translation. And I think maybe not just the mistakes, but just the translation in general at the time might have been pretty weak for the story, because I do think the story has a lot to offer, but I didn't get a ton of that. I didn't get through the game, but I think that's where it lacks. So new game plus from me. Great game.
That's three yeses with only two people so far. Kenny?
That means our votes don't even matter, but that's not news. So it's a new game plus from me. It's classic and popular for a reason. There's a reason it's been remade so many times, and that's because people still care about it enough to keep shelling out money, and that's a good sign. On a personal level, I definitely felt some of the strain of lack of knowledge and early difficulty. That ramp probably could have been smoothed out a little bit just to make it a little bit more new player friendly. But I love the diversity of classes, love the amount of customization and the promise of replayability. And just this type of strategy is fun. I was afraid I was going to react to it like I did like Fire Emblem, and it was going to be overwhelming, but it was handleable, self-contained, the pacing was better, and this is certainly a good game. So yeah, easy new game plus from me.
Awesome. And then I would just say, I think we're all in agreement here, which is rare, but awesome when it happens. I mean, Tom, you just picked a very good game for us to play. And for me personally, there'd be few, if any, Final Fantasies that would not receive my vote for New Game Plus status, not just because I'm a fanboy, but because I just think that they do it right and that they give us great in-depth stories here. I really enjoy that it is kind of more of a realistic fantasy game. It's like very, with this one and Final Fantasy XII, they kind of steep it in this medieval kind of setting, and it's less fantasy than some of the other Final Fantasy games, which I enjoy those too, but it just works here. The sprites, the graphics work, the music is beautiful. I think there are some issues. Again, I think you coming into this game, you're going to need to push past that first hurdle, push yourself past that first hill, but if you're able to, you're going to have an incredible experience set out for you. I definitely give my vote for New Game Plus status, which means that Final Fantasy Tactics is New Game Plus certified.
Dustin, to be fair, you are a Final Fantasy fanboy, but that doesn't mean that's the reason you like this game.
Fanboy for life. We've got a few emails from our listeners giving us their commentary and thoughts about the game. Antonin wrote in and he said, "I absolutely loved the graphics. It's in sharp contrast to the blocky 3D. This game was beautifully pixelated, and moving the camera from one viewpoint to another was really awesome and completely unexpected. The gameplay was fun, but the first solo battle really tripped me up. I had no idea I was supposed to fill the slots with my characters, so I played with just two characters against everyone.
Oh my goodness.
I had to restart the game from scratch to fix that. Outside of that, the gameplay was pretty straightforward. The chemist class was a really great addition because it avoided item micromanagement that you'd see in like Fire Emblem, which is completely overwhelming.
Hey.
I can't wait to hear from all of you and from your guest. How does Final Fantasy Tactics compare to tabletop gaming? Are there any similar games for the tabletop outside of Warhammer, I guess? So that one's for you, Tom.
No, not War. Again, this is just a small group of people fighting against another small group of people. So there's not a lot of games like that. The game I would probably put closest to, it's like Heroescape, you know, a game that came out in the 90s. I'm sorry, in the 2000s. But even that didn't really let you level up. There's very few games that let you level up and get cooler. Gloomhaven does, which is why I like Gloomhaven. Yeah. Gloomhaven may be the closest thing to this. It's a big, giant dungeon crawl, and you take a couple characters through that are extremely unique, but they will not – you can't make them all like each other. Each one will level up in its own different way.
Hey, speaking of Gloomhaven, just very quickly, is it my understanding that your favorite way to play that right now is solo?
Maybe.
We won't tell anybody.
I played that game recently, actually. I don't know if I told you, Dustin, but
you didn't.
I can see similarities for sure. Yeah, it's
awesome.
A great game.
We also had a message from Phil, and he said, I played the War of the Lions 2007 remake, so I'll try to stick to things that are the same as the original release. Pros, nice sprite-ish graphics. They hold up much better than other PS1 era games. Interesting story, at least what I got through. And the job system is fun and something I wish was in more games. Cons, camera was frustrating on levels with buildings or other high terrain, made it a little hard to navigate and would take me out of the battle. Tutorials are a separate part of the game instead of being a part of the beginning of the game. I hate this because it feels like if you want to learn and play the game properly, you have to spend 30 minutes wasting time and just build it into the game and use that time for the exposition of the story. Final, it does receive New Game Plus for me, but play the remake if you can. The translation and the cutscenes are worth it.
Nice. Thanks for writing in.
Absolutely. Anton and Phil, anyone else that sent their commentary in and we weren't able to include it as a part of the show, thank you for sending in your thoughts. We'll respond to each and every one of those either through email, if you sent it to us at ngppodcast@gmail.com, if you sent it into our new channel on Discord, which has been super nice, or any other way, we'll definitely respond back to you. Thanks for being a part of the show.
That's a pretty bold statement. What if somebody sent us a carrier pigeon?
We are going to retrieve a pigeon and we'll make it work.
Kenny. We'll respond in kind. Okay.
Yeah. So Tom, at the end of each and every one of our episodes, we randomly select a new game that we're going to be playing for the next 7 days. So the game has to be 15 years old or older. It can be any genre on any system. I know you haven't seen our retro master list, but are there any games that we need to make sure are on that list that we could potentially play one day that you would like to see us either suffer through or enjoy?
Toe Jam and Earl.
Hey.
Interesting. We've played that one.
We did it just a couple months back, and it was a fun, fun experience. So if you're listening to this and you want to add any games to the Retro Master List, again, you can find that Retro Master List, the link to that, on any of our social media, but you can send us games to add. The list is well over a couple hundred now of great games, bad games, and in-between games, and games that aren't really games at all. But for now, we're going to randomly select and find out what our next retro game of the week is.
Very excited.
All right, boys, we're going from the PlayStation to the Nintendo 64.
I'm a fan. I'm a fan.
It came out in 2001.
Please say it's Superman.
Oh, no.
Please, no.
It is a platformer video game developed, I think we're going to all be good with this, by Rare.
Okay, so
that's
a good sign. It's a handful of games. Go ahead.
The game's story follows a greedy, heavy drinking red squirrel who attempts to return home to his girlfriend. We are going to be playing Conker's Bad Fur Day.
Okay. Not what I expected, but Rare is hype. Rare is a very good
I love company. Rare, but I've never played this one. And that premise of a heavy drinking red squirrel. Okay.
I feel like Nintendo 64, more than a lot of the other consoles we go back to, is really hit and miss in the how well
no,
things
it's
age.
Not. It's always hit.
So
get out of here.
We'll see.
But it is Rare, and that's typically hit.
I'll give you that.
Join us in Discord this week. We have a thriving community in our Discord server. We'll be talking about Conker's Bad Whatever and a lot of other things. So join us there. If you go to our Twitter, you can click on the invite link for free. So we'll see you there.
Special thanks to all of our supporters on Patreon.com. Our patrons help make this show a reality. So thanks to each and every one of you, and especially to our producer level supporters, Zion, Bradley, Gimbarino, and Phil. You guys are the best.
And you can find us on our social media. That's Facebook and Twitter at NGP Podcast, or our YouTube channel. That's New Game Plus Podcast. You can listen to us on any podcast provider of your choice. But we'd love to know, Tom Vassell, where our listeners can find you. Could you just let everybody know where they can find you, how they can check out all that you're involved in?
Oh, sure. An easy way is to go to Dicetower.com. Or if you're interested in the board game, type the name of that board game and put video review after it, and we're probably there. We try to review all the board games. We don't, but we will do our best. But we have a podcast that goes up weekly. Myself and Eric Summer host it 1 week. Suzanne and Mandy host it the other week. And then the videos, we do top 10 lists. I'm on video all the time. So there's just a ton. But I have a whole host of extra people. We do a whole show about board games every Monday called Board Game Breakfast. I have a big, diverse cast of just different people talking about games.
One last question for you. What is – y'all do so many different segments within the Dice Tower. What is your personal favorite segment that you are involved in?
Probably Board Game Breakfast, or maybe their top 10 lists that we do, or maybe just sometimes the live Q&A that people do, because sometimes I like to talk about things that aren't board games.
Right. Sure. I love that you gave us three there. No, but that's good. And that's a good place to start for our viewers. You probably already know about the Dice Tower, but if you don't, go start with one of those series. Great content. Tom, thank you so much for joining us today. You've been an excellent host and loved talking about Final Fantasy Tactics with you.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
This episode, as always, was edited and produced by our good friend Tom Tate, not to be confused with Tom Vassell. Join us next week as we play Conker's Bad Fur Day. Until then, I'm still Dustin.
I'm Kenny.
I'm Nolan.
And that is Tom Vassell of Dice Tower fame. Woo! And this has been New Game Plus. Dice Tower.